Mills versus minute angle and first focal plane versus second focal plane this week on Mail Call Mondays. I'm John McQuay with 8541 Tactical, and this is Mail Call Mondays, the show that answers your questions about precision rifles, optics, and equipment. Welcome to the Mail Call Mondays, and this Monday our question was sparked by a conversation I had with a viewer at a local match where he asked if I had done a video about Mills versus MOA or second focal plane versus first focal plane scopes. He's getting into precision rifle shooting and is trying to make that decision on what scope to get. There are obviously quite a few options out there, but he was trying to stay in the budget area, and he saw some scopes come up for sale and was asking me about those various topics. Now, we have done a video before, both on second and first focal plane. In fact, I think I've probably done a couple of them. And I've done a video before on Mills versus MOA. But I'm going to kind of put those together, and we're going to do it a little bit of a different twist as well. So we're going to start out talking about low magnification variable optics, like the Bushnell AR Optic 1-8. That I have in here, but we are also going to talk about higher magnification precision rifle scopes like the Athlon Midas TAC that I have here. And before we get really deep into this, I want to explain really quick the difference between second focal plane and first focal plane when we are talking about rifle scope reticles. Now, when we are talking about a first focal plane reticle, that reticle will appear to be in the same relationship to the target no matter what the magnification is set at. So if the target at 25 power goes from the center of the crosshair to the number two mark on the crosshair, then no matter where else you dial the magnification, if you dial it down to five, it will still be from the center of the crosshair to the two in the crosshair. So the crosshair will zoom, or the reticle will zoom, in the same relationship that the target zooms at. So they will appear to be linked together. On a second focal plane reticle, the reticle is independent of the target. The reticle is designed to be correct at one magnification power. And when you change the magnification power, the target will zoom in or out, but the reticle will stay the same. So the reticle will appear to cover more of the target at lower magnification and less of the target at a higher magnification. This is why you can only really use the holdovers or use the ranging features of a reticle at its mil correct or at its reticle correct magnification. So let's start out by talking about the Bushnell AR Optic 1-8 that I have in front of me. Now, Bushnell did send this out to us to review. We're in the middle of our evaluation period on it, and that's why it is mounted on the Geissele LE Super Duty rifle that is sitting here. I kind of wanted to evaluate the Geissele rifle as a mid-tier patrol rifle, so in that $700 to $800 range, and also to see really how I felt about low magnification variables on patrol rifles. Now, there's really no question that on a do-all type rifle, a low magnification variable can give you a very wide range of tasks that the rifle can fill, or roles that the rifle can fill. One power is perfectly sufficient for CQB ranges, room clearing, that kind of thing. And with this optic in particular, being able to roll that throw lever out to 8 power and being able to reach out gives you a little bit more precision for target ID, gives you a little bit better magnification for shot placement. Now, this optic does have a second focal plane ballistic drop reticle. It has Bushnell's BTR1 reticle in it. I'm not a huge fan of ballistic reticles, but in this style optic, you see more and more ballistic reticles, and I'm less against them in this type of optic than I am in, say, a high magnification precision rifle optic. So, the BTR1 reticle, if you look in the owner's manual for this scope, it actually has the subtensions written out in minutes of angle, and we'll throw that up on the screen so you guys can see that. The interesting thing here is I don't see anywhere in the manual where it does a mil version of it, so you have to manually convert between mils and MOA to get an idea of what the subtensions are in mils. This is kind of important because this scope The elevation turret is graduated in 1/10 mil clicks. So you have a reticle that in the manual is set up in MOA, and you have turrets that are set up in 10th mil clicks, which is actually the exact opposite of what you would have found 20 years ago, where you would have had a mil reticle in the scope in MOA turrets. So a little bit interesting. Not a deal breaker in any way, shape, or form, because you notice these are capped turrets. So what you're going to do is basically only use the turrets for zeroing the reticle. Normally, I am a big fan of matching graduations between the two. So matching turrets and matching reticles. So if you have a MOA reticle, you need MOA turrets. If you have a mil reticle, you need mil turrets. And the reason for that is I like to be able to fire my shots through the scope, look and see where my impacts are, measure the offset, dial the offset on, and then your scope's zeroed. You're good to go. If you are shooting for longer distances, then say you get a ballistic calculation out of your ballistic computer or your dope cards or whatever you have. You fire that shot, you see where the miss was at, you can dial your correction, you can look at it and go, okay, this is the correct setting for that distance, and log it down. It's very simple, very easy. What you see is what you get. You measure with the reticle, you dial on. There's no conversions, there's no trying to figure out what the distance is, etc. Again, what you see is what you get. With this, it's a little bit different, and dealing with a very similar system on the 1-4 AR optic, which is now on my patrol rifle. Shooting it in a regular 50-yard zeroing exercise for work was somewhat interesting because the standard zeroing targets that we were using were graduated in minutes of angle, which is fairly normal for military zero targets, and a lot of the zero targets that are used in law enforcement mimic the military zeroing targets. So I could fire my group, but then when I got back and unscrewed my turrets and looked at it, they are in mils. So I have to decide how many mils to dial in order to get my reticle lined up or to get my rifle optic zeroed. That's kind of a pain in the butt. So in a low mag variable like this, if you have the choice between mils or minute angle is probably still the better option for these type of scopes that have cap turrets. You're not actually going to be dialing a lot. If you have a reticle that is either a ballistic reticle that's called out in minutes of angle, or you actually have a graduated reticle that's minutes of angle, then you want minutes of angle turrets. Now, there is a slight variance from this that I'll talk about here for a minute, and that is this optic right here. Now, this is also a Bushnell optic. This is the SMRS, and this is a 1-8.5 first focal plane optic, and it is graduated in, it has a mil reticle in it, and it has mil turrets on it. Now, these are push-pull locking turrets. This is a significantly more expensive optic than the AR-1-8 or the AR-1-4. This is really Bushnell's flagship line of optics here. So the SMRS, in addition to being a 34mm main tube, it's a much larger, much bulkier optic, much more at home on a DMR-type rifle than a small, light 5.56 rifle. But in this optic, I like having the mil reticle and the mil turrets, because again, the reticle is graduated in mils, so again, we can go back to that hole. I can sight in, I can see where the bullet impacts, I can measure the impact of the bullet, and I can dial it on here. And with 8.5 power, on a 50 or 100 yard zero, I definitely can actually measure the offset of the impacts and dial a correction on them. So this works a lot more like my preference for a precision rifle optic. So you actually can use the reticle itself for measuring those offsets, and you can dial your correction with the turrets. And instead of having cap turrets, I am actually going to have push-pull locking turrets. So if it is a more precision-oriented, longer-range type engagement, then you can unlock the turret, and you do have the ability to dial based on a dope card, get your dope set for the range that the target is set at, and fire instead of having to use ballistic holdovers in the actual turret or in the actual reticle itself. Now, since it does have a mill reticle as well, that may mean that instead of utilizing the crutch that is a ballistic turret or a ballistic reticle, then you may actually have to have a dope card taped on your rifle so you can quickly reference that or memorize your dope for each yard line. That way you know if somebody's at 250, 350, etc., you know what your holdover is going to be at that point instead of having to rely on either a line or going halfway between one line or the other. So for larger, higher magnification DMR-oriented scopes like the SMRS, then the same applies as precision scopes, matching turrets and matching reticle. And because we are going to be using the reticle, first focal plane really is what I like to have in these type of scopes. Now, the first focal plane and second focal plane argument, when we come back to something like the AR Optic 1-8, this has a second focal plane reticle in it. The 1-4 that we reviewed a while back has a first focal plane reticle in it. My personal preference is for first focal plane reticles. I like the fact that I never have to worry about what magnification the scope is actually set on to be able to utilize the holdovers in the reticle or to be able to utilize the mil scale that is in the reticle. With this optic, the reticle is only correct on 8 power. It does have a BTR1 in it. It does have ballistic holdovers in it. And again, those are called out in minutes of angle in the manual. But you will make sure that anytime you are using that reticle for anything, that you have it dialed to 8 power. If you have it dialed off of 8 power, then obviously the center dot is still going to be a valid aiming point, but any of the graduations are not going to be valid. So if you have it down at 1 power and you start trying to use those holdovers, it's not going to work out well for you. You're going to be shooting well over the target because that would not be what those holdovers would be for. Now, it does give you the opportunity that if you want to get your ballistic marks in the BTR1 to line up a little bit more accurately with the ammunition that you're shooting, with the ballistic curve of your specific setup, then you can goof around a little bit and try to find out what magnification range and what zero combination lines those two up the best, and then mark that down in your book, maybe put a witness mark across the magnification ring. But in a law enforcement type or defensive type setup, I think you're kind of playing with fire if you do that, because you won't have a hard stop to know, okay, that is where my reticle is locked in. Whereas here, when you hit it on the 8 power, you know that is where the reticle is usable. Anything else, the reticle really is not, or the holdovers in the reticle really are not usable. Now, that is my personal preference. There are other officers. In fact, we're discussing some different equipment changes right now at work, and we have a little bit of a committee that we're throwing thoughts around in. And some of the other members of that committee actually prefer second focal plane because when you are down on that 1 power, you have a much more bold hold point. That center dot is much more visible even without the added electronic illumination. So if you need to use that, if you have an illumination failure, even in low light, when you fire up your weapon light, then that hard center dot is going to be very visible. Whereas when we talk about the first focal plane optics, you have to have that balancing point to where the reticle is usable on 1 power, but when you dial it up to 8 power, it is not so thick as to obscure so much of your target as to not be usable. So it has to be a balancing act for a first focal plane optic. For a second focal plane optic, there's really no balancing act. They just set the reticle size to the point where it's going to be the most useful, and there it is. So There are guys out there that prefer that, and it's not for me to tell you that you're wrong. It's whatever you can use most effectively. You just have to remember that limitation and know if I'm going to need to use holdovers, I've got to switch over, flip that thing up to 8 power, and that's where I'm going to use my holdovers. Now, there are little tricks like 4 power, since the ranging power on the scope, or the mil accurate power on the scope, or reticle accurate power, however you want to describe it, is 8, then when you are on 4 power, then you just multiply all those. So you can play little games like that, but again, you have to really know your equipment if you're going to start messing around with that. Those are just some of the preferences, or some of my preferences, for low magnification variable optics. If you guys have more questions about those, we can go much more in depth into the use of low magnification variables. But since we have tended to keep this precision rifle oriented, I just wanted to give a bit of gloss over to those and give you guys the opportunity to ask questions later. Now, we'll talk about the Athlon Midas TAC that I have right here. This is kind of a really interesting optic because it is towards the top end of Athlon's line of scopes, but it is still not quite their flagship yet. It has some nice feel to their turrets. Overall, it has a fairly high-quality feel to the scope in itself. Now, again, Athlon did send this out to us to check out. This is their 5-25x56mm version, and it is the Midas TAC. Now, this does have turrets that are graduated in 1/10 of a mil, and it does have a milradian-based holdover reticle in it. So we do have matching turrets, matching turret to reticle. Again, this comes down to that it's much easier to zero because you can fire a shot group, measure the offset, dial the offset in, and then be done. It's much easier to back into your dope or make corrections when you're shooting. So say you're at a match and you're shooting steel and you keep noticing that you're just wearing out the bottom edge of that target when you're aiming for the center. Well, it's very easy to look and see, okay, well, I'm 4/10 from the bottom edge of the target to where my aim point is. So when you come off of it, you know, for that yard line, you need to come up 4/10. This is very, very useful because there are a variety of issues that could cause that. Maybe your load changed a little bit. Maybe your barrel condition is changing your muzzle velocity. Maybe temperatures are changing your pressures, or your gun took a whack and moved things a little bit. So any of that stuff is great to be able to come back in and then use that to directly relate to what you're seeing. You can still do this with mixed, say, MOA turrets and a mil reticle. You just measure the offset, and then you have to apply a correction factor to come up with what your dope change would have actually been. But it's difficult to do that on the clock, and the less math that we can do when we are in the middle of a competition or in the middle of an actual live fight for your life type situation, then that's kind of a good thing. Now, if we switch this over and we look at minute angle versus a minute angle reticle, I really don't have any issue with that. So if you have an MOA-based reticle and MOA-based turret, you can do the exact same thing. So if you are missing your aim point, if you can measure that variance and you can dial it back in, you're good to go. Log that in your notes. Drive on. The same thing with zeroing. You can measure your offset, dial your offset right in, and you're good to go. So if we combine that with what I was explaining about the low mag variable zeroing procedure, where we may have an MOA-based target that the military has used for a long time, that a lot of law enforcement agencies use, you may think, okay, well, then MOA is the way to go on scopes. That and, you know, here in the U.S., we tend to stick to that unit of measure quite a bit, while I won't get into the mils metric thing because mils are not metric. We tend to stick to inches, and MOA is somewhat of an inch-based system. It's not really true 1 inch at 100 yards. It's something like 1.047 inches at 100 yards. So we tend to gravitate towards that though because of the old days of quarter minute clicks, eighth minute clicks. Those were what the old scopes were graduated towards, and that held over quite a bit. So if you decide to go that route, you wouldn't be wrong, but the reason that I usually recommend that shooters go with mil-based turrets and mil-based reticles is because that is what's most common for precision rifle shooting now. If you go to a match and then you go down the line and you ask everyone, what is your scope, mil or MOA, you will find that most of the field in most places that you shoot will have mil-based reticles and mil-based turrets. That's just the way things have gone. And I think it was driven by the reticles and then wanting the turrets to match the reticles. So while it is a mil is a more coarse unit of measure than a minute of angle, we're usually also working in 1/10 mil clicks, and we're usually working in quarter MOA clicks. So it gets a little bit closer when you break that down. Now, my preferences for mils, spotting scopes that have reticles, you'll more commonly find mil reticles in the spotting scopes if you run into a situation where the guy next to you is spotting for you. There's a greater likelihood that he is going to have a mil-based reticle in his scope. So being able to spot for you, being able to have that common language back and forth is very important, especially if you are a new shooter. So that is when I recommend mil-based reticles and mil-based turrets. Now, to come back to the first focal plane versus second focal plane argument, you can absolutely get away with second focal plane precision rifle scopes, but the thing you have to remember is you are, for most intents and purposes, turning your variable magnification precision rifle scope into a fixed magnification. So if we use the Midas TAC, which is a first focal plane scope, but let's pretend that it's second focal plane, then since this is a 5 to 25 power scope, then the mil correct setting, or the setting where the subtensions of the reticle are correct, would normally be at the maximum magnification, which would be 25. So then you, anytime you're going to use holdovers in the reticle, you would want to be at 25. If you are at another magnification, you are going to have to make sure that the markings on the magnification dial are correct and that you apply the correct magnification factor to the reticle to get the correct subtension. So that's a lot to remember, and that's a lot to go through. It is really, really much easier just to go with a first focal plane scope and go, hey, you know what? This next stage of fire is going to be a little closer range. I'm going to have to start at this, 100-yard target here, and I'm going to end all the way over here on an 800-yard thousand-yard target whatsoever, and I'm going to have to do this all in 60 seconds or 90 seconds. So it's going to be really tight. You're going to have to get all 10 shots off and you're going to be traversing at the same time. Well, since you're going to be traversing, you're probably going to want to dial your magnification down so you can at least see the next target or two in the array. So when you finish engaging this target, you can see where the next one is and swing to it. If you're in too tight, then you get lost in the scope. Then you're searching around and all you're seeing is grass, trees. Where's that target at? And then you have to dial your magnification back, find the target, dial your magnification back up. If you are engaging multiple targets at multiple distances on the clock, most shooters are going to start holding instead of dialing because that gives you more time to get stable and get your shot off than be up looking over your scope and dialing and getting that dialed in. So for that, for the holdover portion, you absolutely want a first focal plane optic. So now with a first focal plane optic, we can dial down to wherever we want the magnification to be to give us the field of view we want. Now we can use the reticle to hold over at that magnification, and we can use the markings that are on the reticle just as they were intended by the factory. The only drawback that you could run into is if you are in too low a power because of that balancing act with the thickness of the lines in the reticle, it can make the reticle more difficult to see the finer etchings in it when you are at a lower magnification. So that's really the only drawback of first focal plane. The only other drawback is if you are comparing like to like, then first focal plane scopes will generally be more expensive than the second focal plane scopes. And that just goes into the complexity of the optical assembly. It is a little bit more complex than a second focal plane. I'm not an optical engineer, so I'm not equipped in this video to go into the minutiae of that, but that is what I have been told. I think as we continue to see more and more first focal plane scopes, that gap is closing, and you tend to see the cost come down significantly on these. A full-featured first focal plane scope in the 5 to 25 range with zero stops or locking turrets and a gridded reticle, they have come way, way down in cost from what they would have been 5 or 6 years ago. So we're getting a lot better optics, a lot better features for a lower cost. So coming all the way back to the question that initiated this, the shooter wanted to know that if he could find a second focal plane or an MOA scope on sale, should he get it versus holding out for a mill-based first focal plane scope? So my answer to that is going to be, if it is a MOA reticle and an MOA turret and it's a significant cost savings and you are not going to be able to afford that same scope in a mill-based setup, then yes, go ahead and jump on it. Now, if we are talking about a second focal plane scope versus a first focal plane scope, there I would have to say, if you are truly interested in competing with the scope, you need to save your cash. If you are a law enforcement shooter, I would definitely recommend saving up and going for the first focal plane scope. There are just too many things that can go wrong if you need to utilize holdovers on a second focal plane scope versus what you can do with a first focal plane scope. But as always, that's my opinion. I really want to hear what you guys think. So please let me know, what do you feel about the differences between MOA and mill-based first focal plane and second focal plane low magnification variables? And then how do you feel that translates over into the higher magnification precision rifle-oriented optics? I really want to know your input. You guys really spark up some great conversations down below in the comments, so I love reading those comments and seeing what you have to think or how it applies to your style of shooting, because not all of us shoot the same types of competitions. Not all of us have the same roles that we intend to put our firearms into. So please drop a comment down in the comment section down below, or send a comment to us on Facebook or Twitter. Now, because I showed a evil, nasty black rifle, aka the modern musket, here in our video, we will probably get demonetized on this video, but fear not, our supporters over on Patreon are still making things happen. So if you guys want to help support the content that you know and love, please check us out over on Patreon. We would love to have you. We are going to try to bump up our Patreon content that is only for subscribers. So check us out over there, see what's going on behind the scenes, and see what we're involved in. We also will request Mail Call Mondays questions over there occasionally, and we will pick exclusively from the Patreon questions occasionally for certain videos. So make sure you know what's going on. Make sure you are involved in that community there, and we would love to have you. And until next time, get out and shoot.